Before we get started, thank you, Mark, for showing up.
You're welcome,
Appreciate it.
Keith. Good to see you as well.
Okay, it is 1:00. We will bring this meeting to order. Contrary to the published agenda, I'll just point out there was a typographical error. It was issued at 9 a.m. All other notifications relating to this meeting pertain to 1 p.m., which is what time it is now. So we will begin our meeting today. Ms. Vanderveen, can we have a roll call of board members present, please?
Yes. Mr. Mitchell-Turbinson?
Present.
Dr. Kevin Lee?
Present.
Dr. Camacho? Ms. Angela Powell? Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Present. So we have 3 present, which constitutes a quorum. I anticipate that Ms. Powell will be joining us briefly or shortly. So we've moved forward. And we are joined today by both Assistant Attorney General Casey Hutchinson and Mr. Mark Brachtel. Am I saying that right, Mr. Brachtel?
Yes, you are, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Good. And just for the record, can we, from whoever it's appropriate to provide this briefing, explain the presence of 2 AAGs during today's proceedings?
I can do that. Go ahead.
Well, so since I'm, because this case in the posture that it's at, I'm prosecuting it on behalf of the board, I can't advise or really have communications with the board with respect to it, if the board had any questions. So there's an independent legal advisor here for that purpose.
Thank you. So just so we're clear, if we have, if we're seeking legal advice relative to our proceedings, we would ask Mr. Brachtel if we had questions specific to the investigation, then it would be permissible to direct those questions to you. Is that correct, Mr. Hutchinson?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. And so the first item on our agenda today is an informal settlement conference relative to case number 2020-36 and 2022-002 in the matter of Dr. Herbert Schillerstrom. And to begin things, and again by way of protocol, Ms. Vanderveen, may we have just a brief overview for the board's benefit with regard to what an informal settlement conference is and is not?
So as part of the formal hearing process, the licensee or the respondent has the right to request a settlement conference with the board to attempt to make a settlement in lieu of going to formal hearing. So this matter has been before you, and the board made a motion to put it at formal hearing with the Office of Administrative Hearings at the request of the respondent. So that is where this case is right now. So as part of that, this process, and one of the options is to enter into this settlement, have a settlement conference, and negotiate an agreement that both sides could come to terms with instead of going to the hearing.
Thank you. Any questions from board members relative to the protocol? Hearing none. Okay, thank you, Dr. Lees, Mr. Turbinson. I see that Dr. Schillerstrom and Mr. Greer are present, but for the record, can you, Dr. Schillerstrom, identify yourself and also your legal representatives?
Yes. My name is Dr. Herb Schillerstrom, and I'm here with my attorney, Joshua Greer.
Thank you. I don't know about everyone else, but I did have a little bit of difficulty hearing you, sir, and it would be helpful perhaps if you could cuddle up to that microphone a little bit better, just to help us to make sure we're hearing this. Thank you very much. So that said, Dr. Schillerstrom, you or Mr. Greer are welcome to make any comments that you would care to make relative to this matter.
I'll go ahead and start. We appreciate the board
meeting with us. I know you didn't really have a choice. This is something you offer, and we accepted it. So, as explained to Mr. Hutchinson, Dr. Schillerstrom loves the practice of
chiropractic.
Loves the practice. and I know he's been doing it for a long time. It seems almost 5 years ago he kind of went astray and has been dealing with the ramifications of that since. He would like to find a path forward where he could continue to practice for the remainder of his career. We like the case before us. I'm a very, very expensive friend. And, you know, there's a significant economic advantages to reaching a settlement as compared to contested hearings before OWA, back before you guys, before the trial court, before the Court of Appeals, and a petition to review the Supreme Court. That's a long, expensive process, and that's what we are looking to avoid. We are not looking to avoid that by Dr. Schillers from surrendering his license or ceasing the practice. And so what we're looking for today is a path forward where Dr. Schillerstrom can address the issues before the board and continue practicing in the way that the board approves of. As I see this case, there are really three primary issues that need to be addressed. There's the payment issue. Dr. Schillerstrom did not pay his previous fine in the manner that the board wished him to. Looking back, if he would do it a different way, maybe he would have. At the end of the day, the payment has been made. I know it wasn't the way you guys liked it to be, but it was made. With regard to the complaint brought by the insurance company, we acknowledge there are significant record-keeping issues that Dr. Schillerstrom needs to address. And he is addressing those. Last fall, he took Dr. Greg Friedman's two-day course on documentation and is endeavoring to do better. The final issue is the mess over the 2021 reinstatement. Prior to early 2022, the board's position was Dr. Schillerstrom never submitted an application. After Dr. Schillerstrom established that he did submit an application, the board's position changed to that we received it and we sent it back. The board sent it back to Dr. Schillerstrom. Every correspondence that Dr. Schillerstrom has received from the board has been signed, except for one piece of correspondence, and that's the correspondence in which Jamie Shapiro claims that she sent back Dr. Schillerstrom's application. That's suspicious to us. You guys signed everything, and the key piece of correspondence in this case was not signed. And so I don't know what happened. I know Ms. Shapiro told me that the board never received it. It seems that she was incorrect when she said that. I don't know what happened in December of 2020, but it appears to be undisputed that Dr. Schillerstrom did submit an application in November of 2020. The board didn't act on it. I think that could, that's an issue that the court may have to decide what happens there. But by and by, I think we can get past this. Dr. Schillerstrom is looking for a way where he can continue practicing. Anything to add?
That's basically it. Those are the three issues there. And to me are, something that's very simple that can be handled. And the board just needs, basically, this has gone on since, actually it started in 2017. It's been going on now for 8 years. And if it moves into court, heaven only knows how much longer it's going to go on. So that's it.
Can I just make a point for the record that at 1:09, Ms. Powell did join the meeting?
Yes, thank you. I was about to make the same point. Welcome, Ms. Powell. So we have a quorum plus one, and we can move forward. Thank you, Dr. Chilistrom, Mr. Greer. Ms. Powell, Ms. Vanderveen, can you please give us an update in terms of where we are in terms of the progress of the proposed settlement agreement and its content?
What are you looking for me? Do you want a recommendation from board staff or?
No, I'd like the board to just, because this says, we have new board members who may not have been all that familiar in the amount of material, as Dr. Schellstrom commented, goes back. There's a great deal of material over a great deal of period of time. And I just would like an overview of where we sit right now with regard to how this settlement agreement, this settlement proposal came about and its general content. Is that helpful?
At this point in time, there is no agreement. We haven't discussed anything. Anything the board would like to put on the table today as an option is available to them. So board staff has not had any discussions around what an agreement would look like with the respondent or his attorney.
Okay. That's part of the part I wanted to next determine is whether or not Dr. Schellstrom or Mr. Greer have had the opportunity to review or
There's no document at this point in time. That's what we would like. I think what we are asking for is direction from the board in terms of what if you want to draft something or if you just want to proceed to OWA with the formal hearing.
Okay. So with respect to that, Dr. Schellstrom and Mr. Greer have indicated an interest to not move forward. I personally agree. If we can get this matter resolved with some form of agreement. That said, our board has had the opportunity to, and some of us have been involved with this process for quite a number of years, and I know that the process is very extensive. While I agree in general that the summary of issues as they stand today are relative issues, I also feel that there's a third issue, and that issue is one of non-compliance and a repetitive, evasion of communication and so forth, which is well documented all these years and in fact is a major contributor to most of the time that's been involved with here. So this isn't, the previous board has ruled to move forward with a formal interview hearing process, and that obviously is a serious situation where, and the recommendation might likely be revocation. And so we have to deliberate today with regard to what options are available to us under which we would consider allowing Dr. Schellstrom to continue the practice, but with some level of accountability built in so that we could, in fact, verify documentation and verify and hold accountable hold Dr. Schellstrom accountable for reporting on a timely basis and complying with board orders, which has been a very significant issue on a repetitive basis for years with a history prior to that as well. So with that said, do any of the board members have any questions at this point? Hearing none, does the board have any, staff have any recommendations with regard to the options available to us?
Give me one second.
Let me, May I interject you?
Sure.
Agree to the chair. This is your independent advisor, Mark Brechtel. A question for the chair. I have a copy of the complaint and notice of hearing that was filed in this matter.
Yes,
that sets forth the factual allegations. I want to ensure, do your board members also have this document for today's?
Yes. Yes, it was in your material.
Okay, good enough. Thank you.
Yeah, our board members have had the opportunity to read that. And thank you for asking.
So one of the options that may be advisable to the board for this matter would be a stayed revocation, which would allow him to continue to practice under that as long as he remained compliant with the agreement, with maybe a potential term of suspension for a period of time, and then a period of probation. I would leave that up to the board to determine that. And then perhaps to address the concerns with documentation and record keeping and the various complaints, because these two complaints, the complaint we currently have plus the previous history, are very similar in terms of that. So maybe one of the resolutions to that would be placing a practice restriction and requiring the licensee to no longer engage in independent chiropractic practice and work for another doctor or business entity, and have the board approve and monitor that. Quarterly record audits, I will leave that to the board to determine the number and the time frame. And then a board-approved auditor practice monitor for that time frame for those record-keeping audits, and then continuing education, so a total of 51 hours of continuing education, which would be 17 hours in the course of medical record-keeping by PBI education, and 34 hours in the area of ethics, and taken past the 34 hours course in medical ethics and professionalism. So that would total out, and then take and pass the jurisprudence exam, and then pay the cost of the investigation for $5,000.
And this would be in addition to the cost already incurred previously to what
happened? Yes, this would be for this investigation.
Okay. Those are our options before us.
Well, no, anything is, those are, that would be maybe board staff recommendation and looking at the investigative complaints and the disciplinary history.
Thank you. In the event that we were to come up with what would we call that, a settlement proposal from the board?
It would just come to them as a consent agreement.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to distinguish if there was a difference between a consent agreement and what we're talking about. So
no, it would just be a consent agreement.
We would offer that consent agreement with the other option being that we would then, instead of that, move forward to OWA, referring the matter to OWA. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. It's a little bit of a tricky procedural issue. That's why I'm just carefully walking it through each step. I guess I would ask at this point, Ms. Dr. Schillerstrom and Mr. Greer, you've heard what the board staff recommendations are. What comments would you have relative to that package?
Some of that stuff, you know, I don't think we're agreeable to all of that package. That seems draconian is probably the word I would use. It seems extremely severe. But some of the things that were suggested are things that I myself contemplated. So, you know, if what you're telling me, Mr. Chair, is, oh, that's your offer, take it or leave it, you know, I'd like to talk to my client. I'm inclined to say, well, we'll probably leave it. But if some of that stuff, you know, the medical records course is something that I would advise Dr. Schillerstrom to accept. I think that's appropriate, addresses the issues in this case. A practice restriction where he can't treat his patients without working for somebody else, That seems a little too far. A quarterly audit of his charts, where he provides charts to the board to review, that seems very, very appropriate to ensure compliance with the board's order and to prove what he's learned from this course. Having a practice monitor monitoring everything he does, that seems extreme. A sustained suspension of his practice seems entirely appropriate in this case. A revocation where if he doesn't take 57 hours of continuing education seems extreme. So, there are parts of staff recommendation that I think are appropriate and something that I think we would agree to. There's other parts that are just, I think, inappropriate and stuff that's not, Dr. Shulstrom wouldn't agree to.
Thank you.
And I don't want our presence here to chill the board's discussion. I believe that the board can go into executive session to obtain legal advice on these types of issues. I understand you don't have to. It's your choice, but I don't want our presence here to chill a negotiating session that's otherwise, hey, you guys don't want to say what you really think because we're sitting right here. I
appreciate that, Mr. Greer, and we are aware of our executive session options. I want to do as much of this in an open forum as possible, just so that the matter and the protocol and so forth is visited on the record. And to your point of is this a take it or leave it situation, at this point it is not. This is a discussion. Those options I would anticipate very shortly that we would visit in executive session. But I wanted to get your sense of feedback and your client's sense of feedback relative to these matters before that happened. I also would be interested in any questions that any of my board members would have about this matter that are appropriate for outside of executive session or directed towards board staff or to Dr. Shulstrom or Mr. Greer. Do any of you have any points of curiosity that you would like to follow up on?
Chairman, I do have a quick question. So today our goal is to decide on whether we would accept a consent agreement. Are we deciding on what that agreement should be today, or is that just a separate matter?
We would, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Vanderveen, but what we would do would be, number one, we're determining are we willing to offer a consent agreement, and if so, what would the content of that agreement be? And what we've just heard is a summary of our options before us by the recommendations of staff. There may be other options, and certainly there are others that we could consider. But given the gravity of this situation and the number of efforts that have been made in the past, I'm not aware of any. So, but we have any option that we believe to be reasonable that we could then offer up and saying, well, under these circumstances, are we comfortable having this doctor stay in practice, or do we really feel as though we should move towards revocation and refer this to OLA, the Office of Administrative Hearings? Does that help?
Yes, thank you for that.
Can we, hold on, go ahead.
Just, this is again your IA, Mark Bretzel. What I've seen work in other informal settlement conferences would be perhaps it would work in this case. The starting point would be the findings of fact that are in the complaint and notice of hearing. And if the parties can agree on accepting the findings of fact 1 through 24, that may provide quicker direction as to an agreement on proposed discipline. I've seen it work. I don't know if that would work in this case. Just an idea.
Okay. Thank you. And are those findings of fact, I'm curious about one point, are those the same findings of fact that I believe this board agreed upon previously?
It would be, but I think what Mark is saying to you is that we need the respondent should agree to those as well in order to move this forward, right? So if we could come, am I understanding that correctly?
Correct.
So that we would know, like, the non-negotiables maybe that are off the table, and that would impact the level, the discipline or the consent agreement.
Okay, I understand. So now so would it then be appropriate to just review those at this time or ask the respondent and or his representative if they're familiar with and if they have any issues with the findings of fact? What are our options?
Perhaps maybe just ask if they're going to agree to all of them or which ones they would agree to or not agree to. And then we can determine, is that something that for the board is an absolute and we have to go to hearing on that, or is that something that we're willing to take off the table to settle the matter?
Okay, Mr. Greer, do you have a response to that?
In the interest of getting a deal done, there are very few of the findings of fact that will be expressly, rejected. There are some that just aren't true, or maybe they're true, but the implication drawn from them by the board is incorrect. But, in the interest of getting a deal done, we're happy to agree to, I'm not going to agree to all 24 paragraphs right now, but I believe, those paragraphs and or some minor corrections to those paragraphs could be agreed to in the interest of getting a deal done. But there are a lot of the facts that we simply disagree with that, outside of a deal, we're going to be hotly contest. But, paragraph ones and two, we agree to those. Paragraph three, we agree with that one. Most of the early paragraphs, like I said, with regard to the payment issue, we agree that Dr. Schellstrom didn't pay the $5,000 fine in the manner which the board asked him to. He did pay the fine. It took him longer than the board asked for. And a lot of that was because there was a worldwide pandemic. And the governor had issued an order suspending these types of civil penalties. And Dr. Schellstrom received advice from his elected officials that he didn't need to pay them or to make smaller payments. And so do we dispute that he didn't pay the board? No, we don't. Do we think there's significant mitigating circumstances as to why he chose not to do that? Yes, we do.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Powell.
Maybe this would be easier if Mr. Greer would state exactly which ones are a hard no. It sounds like there's very few of those, so that we can consider that.
I think the way to do that would be to refer to our answer that we filed to the complaint, because I think that shows the ones that we admitted and the ones that we denied or explained. I don't know if the board has a copy of the answer that was filed. It's the same.
Are you referring to the response? Casey, do we have a response? Sorry. And I missed it.
In as much as I'm not advising anyone anything, just stating the record. I believe there was an answer filed to the complaint that the board should have.
Okay, let me find that.
And the answer that was filed is substantially similar to the response that was filed, I want to say back in early 2019.
The original response?
Exactly, substantially.
Okay. Okay, that is in your material.
Can you direct us to that?
Sure, except for my internet just went out, so hang on.
Would be in the
It's in your board. It's in your materials folder. I guess the response. It's the response.
Responses and in exhibits.
Yes, sir.
Subfolder 3. Responses. Respondents answer. There are two respondents answers. Mr. Greer, what would be the date of your?
It sounds like the one you have would be dated maybe 1/9/23.
This is the original, the 1/9/23.
Okay. And the board has that, correct? If not, we can drop it. If not, we can drop it in your folders real quick. Give us just a second.
I did drop it in the folder already.
Oh, it's already in there. Ryan already dropped it.
I see I think a new document is the response to complaint, April 7th, 2023.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank
you.
Okay, so we have this document for you. I think we've heard where Dr. Shillerson is and his representative. I believe at this point it would be appropriate to entertain a motion to move into executive session. Can I have such a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to move into executive session.
The motion is made. Is there a second?
I second that motion.
Dr. Leeds is seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, all those opposed by the same sign. Hearing none, unanimous vote. We will move into executive session at this point in time.
All right. Give us
questions. It should not be an executive session as well.
Okay. All right.
Correct.
How do we join on this one? You should join. How did we do this? We did this last time.
Okay, so this one I'll just...
Dr. Bennett, you're on mute. Sorry.
Thank you. It is now 1:43. We are back in normal session. We have in executive session deliberated the legal aspects of this case. And I believe that it's the general consensus of this board that we will stand by and ratify the findings of fact and conclusions of law which were established by this board, I think this matter previously. Based upon that, however, and in the interest of all the parties involved, we want to discuss what it is that we would like to see occur relative to this. And with that, I would offer my board the opportunity to share your concerns in this matter. Starting with you, Dr. Lees.
Just based, again, I wasn't part of the initial hearings with this, but I did have a chance to read through the history of the case. It seems like this has been a long case, been very drawn out, so I understand the goal is to come to an agreement, to find some kind of finality agreement on this or consent. I also have seen that there's been a lot of missed deadlines and a lot of back and forth. So one of my concerns is just making sure that this is enforceable and that we don't have to revisit this many times in the future. So based off of what was suggested to us previously, I agree with most of this. I also understand the doctor's point of view about not being able to practice in his own practice. If he has a current practice set up, we want him to be able to financially achieve the goals and, you know, stay with his future, but we also want to make sure that we're protecting the public as well.
Thank you. Ms. Powell.
Oh, Ms. Powell, you're on mute. Sorry to interrupt you.
My apologies. Thank you.
No worries.
I agree totally with Dr. Lees, and one of my other more serious concerns is that the doctor does comply with those quarterly audits. We need to see that those records are maintained properly, and that's something that I wouldn't be willing to budge on at all. And same with what Dr. Lee says, we want you to be able to practice and also to make these payments. And if, you know, whatever we decide, it needs to be something that you can comply with so we don't have to worry about revisiting this issue. So the documentation, quarterly audits, that's all important, those additional hours that you'll need to take and the investigation costs.
Thank you. Mr. Curvinson.
I think I align really almost completely with what Ms. Powell just kind of set forth. I don't have much else to add to that.
Thank you. I would concur and also just make the point that this would be a stayed revocation that would be offered. What that means is that at any point, any aspect of this agreement, if we reach one, would result in an immediate revocation. And that's one of the reasons why I advocate that we, in fact, I didn't hear this in the list of things that the board staff recommended, but I would advocate for Dr. Schillerstrom to be required to report on a quarterly basis with regard to compliance, and not just in terms of record keeping, but also with regard to the other requirements that would be agreed upon, including payment. And I also would point out that I continue, having read in detail the records of all of this and been involved in a good part of it, I continue to have very significant concerns with Dr. Schillerstrom's ethics. And I believe that some level of correction and education on this is a very important part of this case and would concur with the staff's recommendations there. That said, issues that remain, let's just begin with stayed revocation, a period of probation, quarterly record audits with the educational requirements as mandated, taking and passing the jurisprudence exam, quarterly reports to the board, and the additional court costs being paid. Those are the things that look like the things that this board would support. Is there any dialogue that the staff would make or the board would make relative to that? All right. Hearing none. Then I think that it would be, is it appropriate then at this point in time to entertain a motion that a consent agreement be offered containing the items that I just articulated? Is that the correct protocol, Steph? Yes, ma'am.
Just one point of order. At 1:48, Mr. Turbinson had to leave the meeting. I just wanted to note that for the record.
Okay. Thank you. And we do have continue to have a quorum so we can operate.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. With regard to the point of order and protocol that I raised, is the next step then to entertain a motion that offers a consent agreement that contains the elements that I just articulated?
I think we need to ask the respondent and his attorney if they would be agreeable to that in terms of that.
Okay. Mr. Greer, Dr. Schillerstrom, what is your disposition on this?
There's a couple of questions I had. You know, I understand the state revocation. I understand probation. You said quarterly audits and quarterly reports. I don't understand the distinction between what a quarterly audit is and what a quarterly report would be.
I understand your question, and my answer would be that quarterly audits pertain to record keeping. Quarterly reports pertain to overall compliance with the board order.
Gotcha. Would that be an in-person, you know, agendized, he'd have to come to the board meeting in person, I mean, or via Zoom?
Or via Zoom.
Report on his compliance with the board?
I would assume so. I would think that if that, I'm just assuming on behalf of the board, but it's whatever the board would like, but that would be my preference.
Okay, and then costs, you said costs, I'm assuming you're talking about $5,000?
That's what the board staff reported, so yes.
Okay. Any other terms of that board meeting, of that request?
Just the continuing education hours.
Okay, that wasn't mentioned by Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Ms. Vanderveen, did you record that list, or would you like me to read it back out?
Go ahead.
State revocation with probation. I would recommend a 1-year probation, but that's up for discussion. Quarterly record audits with any corrective action appropriate. 51 hours of continuing education consisting of the PBI 17-hour record-keeping program and the 34-hour ethics and medical ethics training package. Take and pass the jurisprudence test and pay for court costs or investigation costs to the tune of $5,000.
Mm-hmm. So a score of 85 or better on the jurisprudence exam?
That's the benchmark for all examinees, is it not?
Incoming examinees is 75, discipline is 85.
Okay, then it's 85.
Mr. Chair, could you repeat the continuing education again?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It's 17 hours consisting of the formalized PBI record keeping and 34 hours of the medical ethics training package. Is that also a PBI product?
It is a PBI. It's the ethics and professionalism, the extended version.
Okay. Mr. Creer, Dr. Shillerstrom, do you have any other comments or questions?
I don't have any questions. I'm going to take a moment to confer with my client to see what comments we have.
Okay. Give you a moment to do that. While we're doing that, it was mentioned that we are on a time limit that we're fast approaching the end of. Is that a hard stop? Are we mandated to end the meeting at 2 o'clock, or is that just to accommodate attendees?
That was to accommodate attendees, and so we're good because we still have quorum, so as long as everybody can hang on. I don't think the other two items should take that long.
Okay, thank you.
We're still conferring, but I can't find any information on the 34-hour ethics course.
Hold on. We can pull it up here and share our screen so you can see it.
That would be fine.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You can eliminate that screen now if you like.
Okay. All right, we'll stop sharing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are the attendees that I see on my screen the only attendees at this meeting?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And Dr. Bennett, just a point, you may want, I know you said 1 year probation, based on the number of continuing ed and the record audits and kind of how the time frame flows out from the PBI course to the record keeping audits, you may want to ask for 2 years or 3 years of probation.
Okay. My only question about that is if there's a state revocation and if he violates,
He stays under the state of revocation for the duration of probation.
For the duration? So
the state complete order.
So the end point of the state revocation is, regardless of the probation, it's the completion of the order, is it not?
Yes.
So he could come off of probation, but not
only have to if you give him an option for early release.
Okay. Then perhaps 2 or 3 years of probation with the option of early release?
Correct.
Okay. Do we want to set any kind of timeline on the payment or on the hours completed? You're muted.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
With regard to, do we want to place time limitations on completion of the hours or payment? Is the payment to be made within 30 days or a year?
I would defer to the board as to how I would recommend that there are time frames on that, but I'll defer to you as to what you would like those time frames to be.
Okay. We can wait till they return and then discuss it in their presence.
So he could take these courses over a 3-year period. If we make it 3-year probation.
Right. No, you can set the terms for when you'd like the education to be completed within that 3-year period.
Okay.
Are you compiling a motion, Ms. Powell?
I'm trying. Yes, I am. Unless Dr. Lee's already has that then.
I do have these things written down, but
okay.
Just to make sure the language is correct.
And I will defer to you to make the motion. And we also set the amount of the payment each month, right?
Correct.
We have some questions and some comments and some clarifications. You know, the PBI courses, I know they're fantastic. They're also incredibly expensive. And whether it was intended or not, the board has, you know, requested that Dr. Schillerstrom take nearly $4,000 of continuing education in addition to a $5,000 penalty. Would the board consider allowing Dr. Schillerstrom to pay the $5,000 penalty at any time prior to the completion of probation, or is the board's intent to say hey, this has to be paid up front. With regard to the probation, I agree more than a year is probably appropriate, but also Dr. Schillerstrom doesn't want a state revocation hanging over his head for 3 years. Would the board consider having the state revocation evaporate after a year, provided that Dr. Schillerstrom is otherwise compliant with the board's order? And I think those are our questions.
My response, and this is just me speaking, I don't speak for anyone else, but I think that given the history here, I would rather set a hard number on the payment of the $5,000. Again, given the past history of issues that we've had, and the allow for more time. I think that, in my opinion, the kind of transition in terms of the learning curve appropriate from the records that we reviewed to what would meet the standard of care, that actually should be allowed to take some time. I would expect the quarterly audits to happen over a couple of years and see an evolution of improvement. So my bias would be to extend the to allow time down on back end for completion of the continuing education rather than trying to get it all done in a fast flurry and not really see a lot of as much change as we might want to see. And with regard to the probation period, I think we could solve that problem with an agreement to an early termination of clause, such should the terms of the consent agreement be met prior to the end of probation.
With regard, Mr. Chair, members of the board, our concern is, you know, we'd like to see the improvement of the charts sooner rather than later. And if we have to choose between paying for the continuing education that's going to improve Dr. Schillerstrom's practice or pay the fine, which isn't going to improve his practice, we'd rather focus on taking the continuing education. I don't know if it makes any sense to submit, you know, quarterly audits before the continuing education has, you know, before he's learned anything, is my point. And so that's why I bring it up. I understand the answer is no, and I understand why the answer is no. But you know, it's just a lot of money right now.
I appreciate your point, but your comment, but that's not what I was saying. My experience, and I have experience in teaching continuing or record keeping over many, many years, is that we don't see quantum changes. We see an evolution of understanding that enhances over a period of time. And my other comment is that I understand and appreciate that Dr. Schillerstrom has already taken Greg Friedman's course, which is great stuff, and one would hope we would already see improvement there. And one is not the other. Those are just my comments. Ms. Powell, did you have something to say?
No, I understand what you're saying about having, being under a revocation for 3 years, but you have the possibility for early termination. If the fine is paid, you complete the courses and the audits all come back okay and you're compliant, then you can petition for early termination. But I agree, Doctor, it does take time for that change to take place.
And my question would be, would the board consider, because often these board orders, they require payments of the administrative penalty up front. We would wonder if the board would consider that, and we can set a hard date, but I was wondering if that hard date could be set later in the process as opposed to earlier in the process.
Yes, Ms. Powell, Ms. Vanderveen.
So just a couple things. The way we have been writing the orders for record keeping audits, we've been requiring the PBI course be taken first, then the auditor is engaged, and then the audits begin, and that's when we start to see that evolution, because that first PBI course, part of it is a self-evaluation and an audit in itself, mm-hmm. to kind of help guide this process. So I would concur with what is the concern is the patient's safety and the quality of the records, and that that should be the priority first over the board's investigative fee, like fines and penalties. And so I think we could draft the order in a way that we address the continuing education in the first year and then the continuing audits and the payments for the investigative costs in the second year, and have that be how the process works through if the parties would agree to that.
Dr. Lees, Ms. Powell, what are your thoughts about that?
I have no problem with that, and I see where doctor could even pay that off earlier. I mean, if the practice starts doing as well as it should pick up with proper record keeping, it may not take 2 years to complete. And again, you have the option for early termination.
Dr. Lee?
Yeah, I agree. I have no concern.
Okay.
A couple of concerns that raise, the quarterly audit, now you're talking about engaging an auditor. What process do you envision there?
Ms. Vanderveen, would you describe our
protocol? So usually when we do record keeping audits, the board staff does not conduct audits. So the licensee engages and a board recommended auditor, and they come in quarterly. They audit 10 files, and then they create a report, produce that report to the board. The board reviews that, determines compliance, and that process just kind of continues. And usually at the end of the audit, you get a recommendation from the auditor, often releasing the licensees for audits or making a recommendation that they need to continue until the records improve.
Ms. Vanderveen, we have a couple of different companies that we can recommend, right?
Yeah, and that is, yes, we have a couple different companies, and we do allow the licensee to select the one that works best for them. They just have to be board approved prior to engaging them.
That wasn't part of the discussion before, so we'll have to talk about that.
Well, no. So when the board orders audits, that's what it means by audit.
I understand that now, but that wasn't part of the prior discussion. Mm-hmm. I understand what you mean now. That's why I asked the clarifying question. Are you set on 10 charts, or could it be 5 charts?
The standard is 10.
I understand the standard is 10. Would you consider 5 charts?
I would leave that to the board.
I don't think so.
The cost. It's just the cost.
I don't think they charge by the number of files that they review necessarily.
They do.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yes.
They charge an hourly rate. The more files they review, the more they charge.
And I would defer
five random charts in my experience has been the same as 10 random charts. It just costs the licensee more money.
I wouldn't be inclined to tell the audit company how to do their job. If that's what they think, if their level of requirement is to, in order to perform a good audit is X number of charts, then I defer to their decision. I'm not going to tell them how to do their job.
In my experience, they take direction from the board how many charts they want to review. I've seen everywhere from 5 charts to 25 charts.
Okay. My opinion.
They're going to go off what the board order says. And so we would request that. Let me talk to Dr. Schoenstrom.
Okay.
Perhaps we should talk in terms of percent of practice then. I mean, if he only sees 10 patients a day, 5 new patients a month, I don't know what his practice is like.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be a problem.
I don't feel... I just feel like they make a recommendation based upon what they think is best.
Okay.
Was there a comment to be volunteered by Mr. Drexel?
No.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for reminding me we're still in an open meeting.
Yeah. We're looking forward to a white Easter this year.
Really? Still in it, yeah.
Wow.
That's funny. I don't remember this month being cold like it has been in the past.
Sometimes it will be.
Where's Dr. Kabatra today?
I believe he's attending a funeral.
Oh.
Leaving that open.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is a more serious order than Dr. Schillerstrom was expecting. That being said, he is inclined to accept it, but he would like to see it in final form so we know exactly what it's going to look like. I want to stress, he can't agree to say it yet. Yes, he's going to sign it, but he is inclined to accept it, but doesn't want to see it. And we understand that the hearing's going forward until there's a signed deal. We understand that. But there is a inclination to accept, and we'd like to see it reduced to final form.
So, yes, thank you. And we are happy to allow you the time to contemplate the proposal. I think the typical time frame is 5 days from receipt or response of the offer.
And could I ask you, Mr. Greer, would you entertain a continuance of the, if necessary, of the?
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Okay.
Like I said, the inclination is to accept the offer. I think that a continuous makes a lot of sense.
So the when we say continuance, does that just mean that we're going to move this forward to another?
No, I'm referring to the formal hearing date at OLA.
Okay. All right. Good. Yeah, that's kind of the idea in general, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. I suppose my general sense is I'm okay with five records if they're okay with five records. But we want to just make sure that they are able to provide a product that they can, that they feel like they're able to have a confidence in their determination. So with that, any further discussion before we entertain a motion for board members? Okay, hearing none. Would someone like Dr. Lee be prepared to make a motion with regard to an offer of a consent agreement?
Yes. I'd like to make a motion that the board draw up a consent agreement for Dr. Sjostrom that requires a 51 total hours of continuing education, 17 for medical record keeping, 34 from medical ethics from PDI, complete and pass a jurisprudence exam with a score of 85% or better, paid back the investigation costs payable in the second year of $5,000, get quarterly audit reports of five records with a board recommended auditor, and also attend quarterly board reporting. This would involve a stage revocation until this is completed with a probation of 3 years with an opportunity of early release. And this has 5 days to accept that.
Well done. Is there a second?
Yes, I second the motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded. The motion was as reported.
So we'll try it up.
Staff, have you got that?
Yes.
Okay, and is there any further discussion of the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed by the same sign. We have a unanimous 3-0 vote with two absences. This concludes the matter.
One question just for timing. Does the 5 days run from today or from the day that we receive the
I believe it's received. Is that not correct?
Perfect. That is correct. It's from the date of receipt.
Okay. And just for the record, receipt, I want to make sure that we get the verification of receipt from the parties involved.
I will confirm, once the offer is sent to me, I will confirm receipt via email.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and that concludes the matter of Dr. Sjostrom. Thank you, Mr. Greer, Dr. Sjostrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy Easter. Okay, now we have item number D, board business. We have two tabs. The first being correspondence from the board. Ms. Powell, do you want to take it from there?
I'm sorry, no.
I'm getting my Angelas and...
You meant Alyssa.
Alyssa, yes. I apologize.
We're becoming interchangeable, Alyssa.
Yes.
Help you.
I did provide the board with about 18 pages of correspondence from Mr. Marlowe. Mr. Marlowe represents a doctor who's in front of the board. And when we had a board meeting, the emergency meeting we had on February 2nd, during part of the discussion, Dr. Bennett stated the name Collision Chiropractors, which was who was paying for the lobbyist. It was a factual statement. But out of abundance of caution, board staff did redact that because it is part of an ongoing investigation. And so the allegation was made by this licensee's attorney was that we were altering the board's public records. The board has demonstrated that we maintained the entire video and audio recording from that meeting and the transcript. And therefore, there was no alteration of the records. It was just protecting confidentiality because the board is required to post the audio publicly. He has demanded a response from the board in regards to what occurred and who made the edits and all of this. But I want to state that after further review with the board chair and with the AG's office, the board has reposted the original audio unredacted to its website since it was a factual statement and was not about confidential information. So I have drafted a response to be sent by the board to Mr. Marlowe and the various entities that he CC'd on this email to close the matter. So I'm open to any input, recommendations, or a motion to send the correspondence on behalf of the board.
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
You read the correspondence, Alyssa. Thank you for your addressing these comments about my surprise and putting together a well done is what I want to say. Well done. Thank you. And I would make a motion to allow her to send that correspondence out. I didn't think it was an altered record to start with. It did not change in any way materially. It was just, again, overcautious. And we can't really be faulted for that, in my opinion. So thank you.
So motion has been made to send the letter as recommended by board staff. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Good. It's been moved and seconded. Just by way of discussion, I will add that the concern was that the comment was an expression of animus towards someone at the meeting, and those of you who were present will recall that what was happening is my comments were simply attending the meeting where the lobbyist from the AAC and the lobbyist from Collision Chiropractic. I knew that only because that lobbyist prior to the meeting came up to me and said, I'm representing Collision Chiropractic. There was no animus implied or intended or present at all. Very simple statement of fact. So that's what that is. Any further discussion?
None.
Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All opposed by the same sign. There are none. Unanimous vote. With two absences, the motion carries. We will send a letter. Thank you. And now, item number C, I believe, on the agenda.
Yes. I don't have any memo or any documentation for this. Dr. Bennett and I discussed this last night about providing some additional communication to the licensees related to this legislative session and the bill that is currently pending in the House related to chiropractic care. And so we had discussion about sending notice to the licensees about the meeting on Wednesday, that it would be a public meeting, and that they would be able to at least watch the meeting and hear the discussion and the position from the board and the individuals interested in passing this bill and make some determinations and have a more transparent process about this. So I think I'm looking for a motion from the board to allow me to work with and have Dr. Bennett approve drafting a website page with this information and an email to the licensees about the meeting on Wednesday. Does that summarize that correctly, Dr. Bennett?
Yes, and if I may provide both some background and some foreground. Background being, we have in the past felt very constrained by our ability to communicate our position to our licensees and to legislatures and so forth. And because of that, we have been, number one, criticized for not responding, and number two, been constrained from correcting information that we feel to be inaccurate or to articulate the concerns that we have relative to public safety and enforcement of our charged tasks as a board. And we have had dialogue with our AGs with regard to this, and we do know that we have options in terms of when it comes to these kinds of things. And I guess I would like to, and since we're not on this case now, I think that Casey is now our AG again, right? So do you want to kind of speak to this subject and what we're allowed to do or not allowed to do?
I'm back. No, I'm back. Yeah.
Who's back?
Hey,
sorry. Yeah. All yours now.
Oh, okay, good. The reason I thought I heard your voice, but on my screen, your face is frozen, so
you're
I can't see your mouth.
You're frozen a little bit, Casey.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Sorry. I think part of the reason why I was broke, I may be having connection difficulties here.
Thank you, Mark.
I can hear board staff, so I'm assuming I'm fine.
We can hear you. You're just not. Oh, yeah, there you are. You're back.
Okay. What was the question? Sorry.
We have had dialogue with regard to what we can and cannot say generally for our licensees and so forth. And so if you could just give an overview of what we are allowed to say relative to public policy matters impacting our board and its operations.
Yeah, sure. So the board obviously can take a position with respect to public policy matters, licensing, anything under the board's purview. The only things that the board cannot communicate to licensees are things that, as the members present obviously know, confidential information, matters under investigation, patient information, things like that.
Okay. So that book kind of opened the door for some options. And so our dialogue has been that there are two areas of concern that we feel, I personally feel obliged to articulate to our licensees and other stakeholders and legislators, those being patient safety and fee splitting, and the legalities of fee splitting, you know, what the laws are and why they're there and why they should be under the realm of our jurisdiction. And so
sorry, Dr. Bennett, I would just caution against anything that could be interpreted as advising, providing legal advice to licensees about what the statutes are and what they mean, et cetera.
Okay. So we need to walk close enough to the subject to recognize that it is a concern and it is within our ability to adjudicate and our duty to adjudicate, but not provide advice.
Yeah. And nothing about that prevents the board from just, you know, in a communication, for example, quoting, these are the statutes, you know,
yeah.
But we can't tell you what they mean, how to abide by them, or anything like that.
But we can say that it is our opinion that this is within our purview and in our duty to enforce fee splitting issues based upon this language.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
Just real quick before I forget, can we ask Casey if in fact fee splitting, for example, is against the law? Is that a violation of regulation or statute?
Well, I guess the...
In a general context, can two providers, healthcare providers, split a fee?
It depends. It would depend on... Because... I've been familiarized with this. There are lots of different versions or interpretations of what fee splitting means. So I would stick to what's in the rule or statute. But yes, it's certainly within the board's purview and what the rules mean. The rules basically lay out what's allowed and what's not.
Where it says, is there somewhere in the rules or statutes that says you cannot fee split?
Yes. It's an unprofessional conduct.
So if a regulatory board or senator or House representative or attorney or anyone would say, no, fee splitting is perfectly legal.
Yeah, it's number 34. It's directly or indirectly dividing a professional fee for patient referrals among healthcare providers or healthcare institutions, or between providers and institutions, or entering into contractual arrangements to that effect. The subsection does not prohibit the member of any regularly and properly organized business entity recognized by law from dividing fees it receives for professional services among themselves as they determine necessary.
That last paragraph, Casey?
Yes.
Is that doctors? Does that allow them to fee split then?
They have to be properly organized.
What does that mean? I asked for a reason.
I understand.
We're taking a lot of flack about that. And so I'm trying to get clear about, you know, when someone in a high position says to me, that's absolutely absurd. Doctors can fee split. Absolutely can fee split.
So, and this, I would say, if you started looking across the statute, this language exists in every single health profession.
Right. So what is a duly organized or an entity recognized by law? What is
I think Dr. Bennett and I had a discussion that it is about, do you have that doctor-patient relationship with that patient?
Please read that second sentence again.
This subsection does not prohibit the members of a regularly and properly organized business entity recognized by law from dividing fees received for professional services among themselves as they determine necessary. I would also say a business entity would be like an LLC, PLC, corporation, something that establishes there's a relationship.
Right.
And chiropractic business entities are recognized by and regulated in the Practice Act. So.
In the what? I'm sorry, Casey.
No, in our Practice Act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they can fee split or they can't fee split?
So they can share fees amongst themselves when you're in that type of organization, but you going out and having just a contractual relationship is not allowed.
Is that right, Casey?
More or less. That's the gist of it, I would say.
So as long as you're in that business entity, you have a relationship with the people in that business entity.
Yes. If the rules allow that practitioners within recognized business entities can divide fees as they see fit.
So if I'm a doctor and I hire a new doctor to work for me, he's, you know, an employee or contract labor, it wouldn't matter. If he does, I do a service for $40, I can split that fee with him.
As long as you two are operating within a recognized...
He'd have to be an employee, wouldn't he? Because a contract labor wouldn't have any relationship with the employer.
Right. That wouldn't be splitting. I don't think that would just be a paycheck.
An employment arrangement.
Yeah.
Right?
You could fee split under an employment relationship?
No, I'm saying that how the employee gets paid, right? Like, you're paid so much per hour, you're paid based so much on the percentage of the business. I think it's where we get into patient brokering, right? If we're talking about something different.
So in the example I gave you, is that okay? Can the doctor split that fee with the contract laborer?
If they are properly organized.
Well, and also, that would also sort of be, I mean, it would be different, at least in my view, it would be different from... what my understanding of fee splitting is, because that would be, you know, that would be a payment for services rendered to your, to the employer, versus for example, a disbursement of a patient fee or an insurance settlement or something like that.
It's just left to interpretation then.
Yeah, it's not.
Because it's a doctor who's collecting his own fee. He just, I give him use of my office, and he gives me half his fee for using my office as a space. He's a contract laborer.
if he's paying, you know, I'm
50% of everything he makes.
Yeah, hypotheticals are useful, but they're
well, this isn't really a hypothetical. It happens all the time.
Okay, so in your circumstance, let's say you pay, or a doctor pays you to use a space.
Not paying to use a space. We're just, between the two of us, I'm saying I'm going to help you out. Okay? You have my office, and you're going to pay me 50% of everything you do in business every month. Some months more, some months maybe less. It's always going to be 50% of your fees come to me.
So I think the issue really with the...
Not rent with space.
Yeah, I wouldn't, and, you know, don't quote me on this, I wouldn't characterize that as fee splitting as such, because in my view, what I understand fee splitting is originating from one patient and then divvying up what that patient, where the money comes from one patient goes to different people. That's what I think, and I could be wrong, but that's how I understand it.
Well, that's what I just said. One patient's fee, and you're going to give me half. I'm going to split it with you.
Well, then again,
so you see the dilemma.
Then unless you're the two of you are operating under a legally recognized business entity, I would say then that would run afoul of board statute.
Okay.
We still have an open motion in a second, and we're still in discussion. So I want to get to the thing that's anticipated happening in the future. We have talked about having, Ms. Vanderveen referred to the Wednesday meeting. We have had discussion of having a special call board meeting, and the idea was to bring our board together and bring the team from those supporting, originating and pushing it, what was originally SB 1233, and just go over the points of law in an open board, in a board meeting, where we could have our AG present and our board present and have full transparency. And that idea was floated to the lobbying team behind the bill, and was enthusiastically supported at first, but now they, as of today, the latest report is that they are not, they're inclined to want to morph that into something else. So, Ms. Powell, can you give us an update on that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I spoke with the lobbyist group. I don't know if I want to mention her by name, but anyway, they were speaking with the governor's office, who has someone in charge of trying to organize a meeting with just Ms. Vanderveen, possibly you and Ms. Vanderveen, but it wouldn't be with anyone else except this lady who has written the legislation. That's what she does. She writes legislation. And I said that doesn't really work in the interest of transparency. What we're trying to do here is not miscommunicate anymore and not give out misinformation, that everyone hears the same thing and we're all on the same page, and that's why I thought a board meeting would work. She said she was having the governor's executive director, Melissa, you know the name. I don't have it in front of me. But the person I spoke to this gentleman has not called me back yet to try and arrange a meeting. He said something to her about next Tuesday, but I still have no notice of that. You have no notice of that. We haven't been contacted at all, which leads me to think that it's kind of fizzling by the wayside. At the very least, it's going to be very short notice for a Tuesday meeting for both you and Alyssa. And I voiced my strong opposition to the short notice, and that it didn't really serve the purpose we spoke about day before yesterday, which was to avoid any further miscommunications. And she said she would go through the entire bill line by line, every concern we had that could be explained, that it was just the legislative language that we didn't understand and that our attorney probably didn't understand the laws that were being brought forward.
Yeah, thank you. So unless it comes as an official, number one, it sounds as though were we to have a special call board meeting on Wednesday, it would be for naught. I don't anticipate that they would take us up on our invitation. Point number two, our reason for doing that was for full open transparency and not separate us out and get somebody to commit to something. Neither Ms. Vanderveen nor I would commit to any language without taking it to the board anyway. And so unless there's some compelling reason, at this point I'm not inclined to move forward with a special call meeting.
I mean, to
have confirmation that we do it the way we offered it. And that would be by the end of the day today. That's a period. So, Alyssa, what are your thoughts on that?
I will do whatever I am directed by the board, however you would like me to proceed. I am ready, able, and willing to do that.
What are the advance notice? One second, a question, and then I'll get with you, Casey. What are the notification requirements for a special meeting of the board?
We have to have the agenda posted 24 hours before the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hutchison?
I was just going to add one just sort of point to clarify. If I understand correctly, one of the issues was that three of the board members had been invited, which would have constituted a quorum, and that's also part of the reason why this meeting idea was suggested, because otherwise it would have been a violation of the open meeting law.
Three of the board meeting members were invited to what?
If we had a meeting between the other parties and Dr. Bennett, Ms. Powell, and Mr. Turbinson, that once we were at three, we would have to have a public meeting in order to have that dialogue at all.
Yeah, well, and that's what we would want to do anyway, is have a full board meeting and have everybody there and have it announced and official and put fully transparent and so forth. And my feeling is, short of that, and unless there's a compelling reason and one that does not violate the open meeting law, then we're not going to have it.
And if it had been suggested that, if she'd said to me today, well, we can't do that because, they need a quorum. If she had brought up that point at all, Casey, I would have said, then I will back away. I totally trust that Alyssa and, of course, our chairman can handle this with you, Casey, present as well, because a lot of what has been said, communicated to me, and I've shared with our chairman, is that we have a complete misunderstanding of the laws and the regulations and are in our rule book. I mean, over and over. So I felt it was important that you be there.
Yeah, and the problem.
I understand now the problem with that, but
yeah, okay.
Right. It needs to be a board meeting, and that solves all the problems.
Right.
But they're not seeming to go for that, or at least that's the impression. I guess we still haven't heard back.
Okay, so then just to kind of try and wrap things up here in a less long period of time, I still believe that it's appropriate for us to issue position statements. I still believe that that's, you know, I don't think that the having it ready for an anticipated board meeting on Wednesday is the prime reason for doing it. It's a good idea regardless of that. And so for that reason, I would support the motion passing. So that was a rather lengthy discussion, but
necessary.
Any other points before we call a question?
Do you want me to restate the motion?
Certainly.
So the motion is to allow to direct the executive director to work with the board chairman to draft two communications to go out to licensees discussing the implications to patient safety should this legislation pass and fee splitting to help clarify questions regarding this legislation.
Well, maybe about board jurisdiction.
Board jurisdiction.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that what the maker of the motion intended? Ms. Powell?
Yes, I'm sorry.
And does the seconder of that motion concur?
I concur.
Okay. Is there any further discussion?
One more point, and then I'll let it go.
Okay.
When I was down at the Senate, the committee meeting, Senator Stamp did make a point of letting them know that we had sent out some correspondence to our licensees, and her point was how inappropriate it was that we did that. So, just so you know.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed by the same sign. Hearing none. 3-0, 3-0-0, 2 absences. The motion carries. Thank you. Is there any other business to come before this board? Hearing none. I would move that we adjourn. I would just entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
I second.
Discussion. Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Okay, thank you. This meeting is adjourned, and we will keep everyone posted as events develop, which they appear to be happening about every 15 minutes. So, y'all have a good day and have a blessed Easter to all of you.
Thank you.
Everyone.
Take care.